Simone's team created novel features such as menus and submenus that appeared at the bottom of the screen and allowed the user simply to select commands, such as print or save, and utilize simplified formulas. Microsoft released the first version of its new spreadsheet, dubbed MultiPlan, in August 1982 for the Apple II, followed by versions for CPM computers and the IBM PC. MultiPlan received excellent reviews in industry publications, as well as Apple's public endorsement. MultiPlan quickly became the leading spreadsheet in sales, although Microsoft was slow to introduce an upgrade that took full advantage of new PCs coming out with more memory. This delay allowed Lotus to overtake MultiPlan with its 1-2-3 spreadsheet in 1983. Lotus went on to take 80% of the U.S. spreadsheet market and remained the leading PC software company in annual sales until Microsoft regained the top spot in 1988. Lotus 1-2-3 provided the main inspiration for the successor product to MultiPlan, called Excel. Klunder offered this comment on the team's development strategy. Our mission was to do everything 1-2-3 does, and do it better. Microsoft began the project with a 3-day retreat, attended by Gates and Simone, to figure out how to compete with Lotus. The output of the meeting was a rough specification of ideal features that the new spreadsheet should have. This was the predecessor document for what Microsoft now calls the vision statement for a new product. Klunder compiled these ideas into a 20-page memo that served as an outline specification. Fulfilling a role that would later become that of the program manager, Jay Blumenthal, who had studied features in VisiCalc, SuperCalc, and Lotus 1-2-3 while working on marketing MultiPlan, took charge of writing up the product specification and worked closely with the developers to flush out the details of each feature. The final product combined the best aspects of MultiPlan with good features from both Lotus 1-2-3 and another competing product, Framework. Microsoft then translated the new program over to the Macintosh platform. As we describe below, Microsoft based its software sales comeback on graphical programming skills refined while working on Macintosh versions of Word and Excel. Word processing. A company called MicroPro started the PC word processing mass market in 1979 with a product called WordStar, written for 8-bit CPM machines. Because WordStar was difficult to use, there remained an opening for such other early entrants as WordPerfect Corporation, founded in 1979, and Microsoft. Simone had designed a graphical word processor called Bravo while at Xerox PARC. He took over Microsoft's word processing development in 1982 and wrote a new product, Word, specifically for MS-DOS and the 16-bit IBM PC. Microsoft then launched the product in 1983 with a brilliant mass-market promotion that gave away 450,000 demonstration diskettes in a special issue of PC World magazine. More so than MultiPlan or the early version of Excel, Word attracted buyers because it had innovative features. These included elements of a graphical user interface, what you see is what you get, WYSIWYG, on-screen typefaces, and a laser printer driver, which Gates had insisted on adding. Microsoft also used much of the same code for its Macintosh version of Word, introduced in 1984. The Mac version did not have as many features as the PC version, but it was the only word processor available for the Macintosh other than Apple's MacWrite, which at the time could not handle documents longer than about 8 pages. Microsoft Word thus filled a major gap in Macintosh software. Along with Excel 1.0, introduced in 1985, it helped the Mac succeed as a commercial product. The Macintosh versions of Word and Excel also helped lay a foundation for Microsoft to compete with graphical applications products for the new Windows PC platform. The PC version of Word did not receive as much attention from Microsoft as the more advanced graphical applications, however, and it soon fell far behind WordPerfect in sales for DOS machines. Later versions of Word would compete directly with and then surpass WordPerfect in sales for Windows machines and eventually for total word processor sales. Applications integration. Microsoft followed its spreadsheet and word processing programs with a host of other applications, such as for presentations, database management, project management, electronic mail, personal scheduling, and desktop publishing, usually for both Macintosh and Windows PCs. The company initially concentrated on standalone products like Word and Excel, but soon found that it could attract more customers by bundling products together and lowering prices. As a result, Microsoft has gradually been trying to replace individual desktop applications with application suites, such as Office. The first version of Office came out in 1990 as a bundle of discounted applications containing Word and Excel as the main attractions and PowerPoint as a presentations package. Microsoft Mail, an electronic mail product, also now comes with the suite. Access, a database management product, is available with the more expensive professional version. Microsoft has gradually integrated the features of these different products and made Office into a low-priced applications product in itself. Gates explained this strategy in October 1993 with the launch of Office 4.0. "For the first time, we're positioning our primary application as being Office, as opposed to the individual applications. Now, this is not to say that the individual applications are not important. They are. But already today, we sell over half the units of Excel and Word as part of our Office package. And so we've turned Office into far more than simply a way of marketing a group of applications at a discount, and rather into an individual product." Graphical user interfaces. As Microsoft diversified from one mass market to another, it moved from character-based interfaces to the most mass market interface of all, the graphical user interface, GUI, pronounced as GUI. Character-based interfaces, such as in MS-DOS and old applications written for this operating system, primarily show letters and numbers on the computer screen. Users communicate with the computer programs mostly through English-like commands or through a series of keystrokes, many of which are difficult to remember. In contrast, graphical user interfaces rely on icons, symbolic pictures that allow people to use the computer simply by moving a pointer controlled by a device, such as a mouse or a trackball. Graphical interfaces make computers much easier to operate, since users only have to point to and click on particular icons to begin a program and initiate other actions. Some DOS applications, like WordPerfect 5.1 and 6.0, now have primitive graphical interfaces, as do recent versions of MS-DOS, but these products do not contain icons and are still essentially character-based. GUI programs require much more hardware processing power and memory than is needed by MS-DOS or DOS applications. But this fact has enabled the Windows standard to stimulate two new mass markets. One for fast PCs with lots of memory, and another for GUI applications compatible with Windows. Growth of these markets, in turn, has stimulated demand for more copies of Windows and new Windows applications, creating a profitable cycle for Microsoft and other applications providers. Developers in Microsoft also learned to build GUI products from working with Apple on applications for the Macintosh, introduced in 1984. Microsoft signed a contract with Apple in January 1982 to design spreadsheet, database, and graphics applications when the Macintosh was still under development. This allowed Microsoft developers to become intimately familiar with the Mac's user interface and internal workings. The contract prohibited Microsoft from introducing a GUI or mouse-based program for any other machine, but only for 1 year after shipment of the Macintosh, or until January 1, 1983. Thereafter, Microsoft was free to develop similar applications for PC compatibles, which it did, albeit slowly, because of the limitations of DOS compatibility and the PC hardware. Microsoft leveraged these graphical programming skills when building the Windows operating system. The first version, in 1985, and a second, in 1987, had many problems, including the memory constraints of MS-DOS. They failed as commercial products. Microsoft persisted, however, and version 3.0, in 1990, broke through MS-DOS memory limitations and sold in the millions. An enhanced version 3.1 in March 1992 quickly sold in the tens of millions and became the new market standard for graphical computing on PCs compatible with the original IBM PC and Intel microprocessor standard. Gates, like his predecessors at Xerox PARC and Apple, recognized in the early 1980s that GUI operating systems and applications were the future of mass market computing. Microsoft bet the company on graphical interfaces. It took much longer than I expected for the graphics interface to move into the mainstream, but today we can say that it is the dominant way that people use their personal computer. We can just look at the sales of DOS applications as compared to Windows applications and see that over the last 2.5 years, character-based applications have gone from being about 80% of the market to now less than 20%. Even that 20% will drop very dramatically when the last major character mode application updates are shipped and all of the industry's resources move finally to doing graphical applications. While Microsoft tried to hone its GUI skills, people in Apple realized that they would lose their distinctive advantage if Microsoft succeeded with its Windows development effort. In particular, Apple protested that the second version of Windows had copied the look and feel of the Macintosh too closely. After $9 million in attorney's fees, however, Microsoft had a lawsuit by Apple dismissed in April 1992, arguing that Xerox had really invented the technology and failed to commercialize it. After denying previous applications, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office in August 1994 also approved Microsoft's long-standing efforts to receive a registered trademark for the label Windows. This decision recognizes Microsoft not as the inventor of graphical computing, but as the developer of the graphical computing standard for Intel-compatible PCs. Networking systems for the corporate mass market. Another PC software market that has been growing along with increases in the capabilities of PC hardware is networked computing. Initially, these users worked on powerful computers based in corporations or other large organizations, such as universities or government facilities. Since the 1960s, these organizations have been able to link people who want to share the same databases or communication systems by using terminals, or since the 1980s, personal computers, connected to mainframes or mini-computers. More recently, various organizations have created networks of powerful desktop PCs or workstations. Some of the machines act as servers of information or communications control, and they connect a larger number of computers acting as clients or receivers of the information. These networks frequently run on operating systems based on Unix, such as Novell's NetWare. To move into this high-end but still potentially very large market, Microsoft followed the lead of AT&T, which invented Unix, as well as Novell and other companies such as DEC and Sun Microsystems. It developed Windows NT and introduced the first version in August 1993, numbered 3.0 to correspond to Windows 3.0, and then an upgrade, NT 3.5, in 1994. Windows NT requires powerful machines with lots of memory and computing power, but it offers special features to attract corporate users. Unlike Unix-based systems or proprietary operating systems, such as from DEC, NT can run Windows and DOS applications programs, and it has the same user interface as Windows 3.1. NT can also run on computers other than Intel-compatible machines. A special version can operate as a server in a network linking Macintoshes, PCs, and workstations. Like Unix and other advanced systems, it has security functions that prevent one user from getting into another user's files without permission. In addition, like Unix, as well as NetWare and OS2, NT is multi-threaded. It can divide itself into several processing tracks, called threads or virtual machines, then run different tasks or applications programs separately, as well as simultaneously. The separate threads protect one application if another fails. Windows 3.1, in contrast, can run multiple tasks and applications, but only on a single thread. If one application fails, the whole system can shut down. Single-threaded applications also must share the computer's time. And one power-intensive application, such as a multimedia program, can cause other programs sharing the processor at the same time to operate extremely slowly. These deficiencies, which are primarily artifacts of the single-threaded MS-DOS, have caused considerable frustration among Windows 3.1 users and make it difficult for Microsoft to sell Windows 3.1 to corporate customers. The origins of NT go back to 1988, when Nathan Myhrvold started a small project to write an operating system that would succeed OS2. OS2 is an operating system initially designed by IBM and Microsoft in the mid-1980s to replace DOS, but marketed and developed solely by IBM after the two companies ended their partnership in 1989. Myhrvold wanted the new system to run on RISC workstations as well as on Intel chips and multiprocessor computers. He decided to license and study Mach, a Unix-type system developed at Carnegie Mellon University in the 1980s under Rick Rashid, now Microsoft's vice president for research. Meanwhile, David Cutler, one of the chief designers of the VMS operating system for DEC's popular VAX minicomputers, had been working on developing a RISC operating system at DEC's office in nearby Bellevue, Washington. After DEC management canceled his project, he quit and joined Microsoft to direct NT development. Microsoft continued to work on the mass-market version of Windows in a separate group, although the two product units have shared some components and design concepts, including the user interface. Windows NT had a slow start, gaining followers. Gates announced that he expected to sell 1 million copies in the first year, but sold only about 300,000. Reasons included the expensive hardware upgrades required to run NT, a severe shortage of application programs available to take advantage of NT's 32-bit processing capabilities, and some other inadequacies common in a new product. Nonetheless, NT has provided a new architecture and many features for Microsoft's next generation of operating systems and upgrades, including Windows 95 and the popular Windows NT 3.5, released in September 1994. NT 3.5 sold 700,000 copies in 4 months and brought total NT sales to about 1 million as of December 1994. Microsoft is also using NT as a server technology for information highway products and services such as interactive TV and video on demand over cable TV lines and telephone wires. Principle: incrementally improve new products and periodically make old products obsolete. Microsoft has preempted the competition as well as dramatically expanded its market coverage and penetration in two main ways. First, by channeling hundreds of millions of dollars into R&D each year and steadily refining its products, Microsoft makes it extraordinarily difficult for competitors to keep up. We can see this in the many versions and flavors of Microsoft's operating systems, spreadsheet and word processing products, and the Office application suite. Microsoft even saved MS-DOS from obsolescence by taking several years to build the graphical Windows interface layer and then gradually making this into a full-scale operating system with MS-DOS embedded within it. Second, Microsoft periodically introduces new product generations rather than complacently watching existing products decline in sales relative to competitors. These new generations, represented by Office, Visual Basic, Windows NT, and Windows 95, for example, still depend heavily on previous products and, in a sense, represent no more than a bundling of many incremental enhancements. When put together with a few new technologies, however, these many small improvements result in new products that make old products almost obsolete. As explained by Chris Peters, vice president of the Office product unit, Microsoft's strategy has been to combine incremental improvements with major changes every 3 to 5 years. The idea is to parallel and even anticipate the exponential growth in the processing power of computer hardware. Everything that we've ever done won't matter 3 years from now. In terms of products, the amount of computing power that will become available in the next 5 years will be equal to all the computing power ever made before. What it basically means is that you always have to be jumping well ahead. If you internalize that exponential growth, everyone else thinks that the thing will be like last year, only a little different, which of course is true for a very short period of time. When you look at the industry in a 2-year little chunk, it does look very linear, and you have to step back and find out that it's always exponentially growing. And then, when you do that, you do make bigger bets, and a little different kinds of bets. I think it's an underlying principle for Microsoft. I think it's something that Bill always understood and internalized, that you must radically change things and really have big plans. A classic example is DOS was doing great. We could have said, let's just come out with new versions of DOS. Why make Windows? And well, Windows takes up so much more hardware and computing power. In a sense, though, an innovation like Office makes the individual apps obsolete. Just when our competitors are trying to be good in Windows applications, now they have to make a good word processor and a good spreadsheet and a good database. You have to be that kind of a software company now. Incremental improvements. Critics have claimed that Microsoft rarely has hit products initially, and usually takes 2 or 3 versions to create products that match its top competitors. For example, the first 2 versions of Windows had very limited functionality, and even version 3.1 trails the Macintosh operating system in ease of use and other technical characteristics. Windows NT originally did not sell well in the corporate market compared to Novell's NetWare, although NT 3.5 is catching up. We can see a similar pattern of improvement over time in Microsoft Spreadsheet, Multiplan, Excel, and Word Processing, Word offerings, Integrated Application Suites, Office, and Home Consumer Lines, Multimedia Titles, as well as Personal Finance and other product offerings. Microsoft Money, introduced in 1991, took 2 versions to approach the functionality of Intuit's Quicken, though it has never come close in sales. Quicken, introduced around 1985, has about 7 million users, compared to about 1 million for Money. Even highly innovative products and technologies, such as OLE and Visual Basic, have undergone significant evolution between their first and later versions. They also await further enhancements. Over time, continually adding new features and changes results in increasingly competitive products. A reading of industry critiques, for example, indicates that Microsoft products now tend to be strong in standard features, ease of use and learning, and documentation and technical support. Some products lag in advanced features, although in many cases, Microsoft is simply targeting mass market users or is still in the process of adding features in small increments over multiple versions. Most Microsoft products now do well not only in sales, but also in technical evaluations, and they have been receiving industry design awards with increasing frequency. PC Magazine, for example, gave Microsoft Office for Windows its 1994 award for technical excellence in application software, and it recognized 3 of Office's components, Word 6.0, Excel 5.0, and Access 2.0, as the year's best new products in their respective areas. In addition, the editors gave Windows NT 3.5 the award for technical excellence in the system software category and named it the best operating system introduced in 1994. These are impressive achievements, given that Microsoft does not specialize. It competes in just about every PC software mass market. MS-DOS. The company's first operating system has gone through 6 versions since 1981, with remarkably few major changes to the basic program. DOS 2.0, introduced in 1983, mostly added support for hard disk drives that came with the IBM PC XT and compatible machines, as well as primitive multitasking when the user is printing. MS-DOS 3.0, introduced in 1984, supported the more advanced hardware available in the IBM PC AT and compatibles, which had faster Intel 286 microprocessors. DOS gradually became known as MS-DOS after Microsoft began selling the operating system to companies other than IBM, and after IBM and Digital Research introduced their own DOS systems. Version 3.1 added networking capabilities in 1985. MS-DOS 4.0, introduced in 1988, offered a simple graphical interface, or shell, designed for use with a mouse, but this found few buyers. MS-DOS 5.0, introduced in 1991, accessed more memory for applications and improved the limited multitasking capabilities, making it possible to load more than one application, but not to run them simultaneously. This upgrade, which proved to be an excellent platform for launching Windows, has sold tens of millions of copies. Microsoft introduced another version in 1993, although managers probably wish they had not. MS-DOS 6.0 primarily added a data compression feature called DoubleSpace, as well as some new memory management features and diagnostic tools. This product suffered from early troubles, including a patent infringement suit won by Stack Electronics that forced Microsoft to withdraw and then replace its initial data compression technology. According to PC Magazine, based on surveys of several thousand users, MS-DOS 6.0 also scored significantly below average compared to DR-DOS, IBM's OS2, and DeskView in product support and several other technical features. More seriously, reviewers complained about problems with the DoubleSpace data compression. See Chapter 6 for a fuller discussion. Microsoft, however, remedied these difficulties with minor updates. The latest, MS-DOS 6.22, is now a solid product and has sold in the millions, usually bundled with Windows 3.1. Although critics like to disparage MS-DOS for technical shortcomings, it has been a remarkable product. It has made billions of dollars for Microsoft while serving as a platform technology for an entire industry. MS-DOS offers relatively powerful features for a very low price, yet requires only a small amount of memory and processing power. These traits have made it possible for inexpensive PCs to run thousands of useful applications. Microsoft has also been able to expand the capabilities of MS-DOS, and it survived into the GUI era as a platform to launch Windows. But the era of MS-DOS as a standalone operating system and platform for Windows is quickly drawing to a close. Microsoft has not put many resources into its development since the mid-1980s, concentrating instead on Windows and NT systems. Consequently, in some areas, competitors have surpassed MS-DOS in features, even though they have not made much headway in market share. Because it incorporates or mimics the code needed to run the old DOS applications, Windows 95 does not come bundled with MS-DOS. There may yet be another version of MS-DOS if Microsoft people think there is a large market for it, but Windows 95 essentially makes MS-DOS obsolete as a separate product, except for people without enough computing power to run graphical programs. Desktop applications. Not until Excel 2.0 in 1988 do industry reviews suggest that Microsoft matched the skills of the Lotus Development Corporation in spreadsheet design. But Excel 2.0 took such excellent advantage of the Windows interface that it saved the fledgling Windows product and helped make it a new standard for the PC, much like Lotus 1-2-3 did earlier for the IBM PC and DOS. The new Excel also drew rave reviews from industry observers, attracting comments such as, "One of the landmark products of its time, a work of art, a masterpiece." Later versions of Excel have sometimes ranked average or below average compared to Windows competitors, Lotus 1-2-3, Quattro Pro, and SuperCalc, but they have generally garnered top honors on the Macintosh. Excel 5.0 is now the best-selling Windows and Mac spreadsheet. Word had a slower start as a product. Despite innovative features, PC Word 1.0, introduced in 1983, and Mac Word 1.0, introduced in 1984, sold modestly, and they received a mixed response from industry critics because of too many bugs. The early word versions apparently were also somewhat difficult to learn, though easier than WordStar. But the major problem holding back sales was the rapidly growing popularity of WordPerfect, which had many rich features as well as excellent customer support over toll-free telephone lines. By 1986, the latter had become the top PC word processor, with approximately 30% of the market, about three times Word's market share. As with spreadsheets, Microsoft had something closer to a success on its third try. Word 3.0, introduced in 1986 for the PC, was more refined and had an online tutorial that greatly simplified learning the program. Microsoft still ran into problems. As discussed in Chapter 1, a 1987 version for the Macintosh became a commercial and public relations disaster after hundreds of bugs forced Microsoft to send customers a free upgrade. Microsoft also took 4 years longer than it initially estimated to finish a version of Word for Windows. Nonetheless, when Word for Windows arrived in 1990, with a new version more carefully ported over to the Macintosh, Microsoft passed WordPerfect to become the market leader in word processor sales. It has occasionally trailed WordPerfect for DOS and Lotus's OmniPro for Windows in surveys of customer support satisfaction and technical features. But Word 6.0, introduced in late 1993, is the second best-selling Windows application behind Excel, and it is also the best-selling Mac application. More than half of Word, as well as Excel sales, however, now come through the Office suite. We should add that while Word has about 65% of the Macintosh word processor market, compared to about 30% for WordPerfect, Mac Word 6.0 has been very poorly received. This is the first version of Mac Word that consists almost entirely of core code from the Windows version, with only a small amount of customization for the Macintosh. Microsoft has done this successfully for years with Excel. As we discuss in Chapter 4, however, Excel contains a special layer isolating it from the Macintosh and Windows operating systems. Because Word does not have such a layer, Microsoft ended up with a large and extremely slow Macintosh version. In order to ship the Macintosh version as soon as possible after the new Windows version, Microsoft also decided not to take extra time to tailor Word 6.0 code for Mac hardware. Developers eventually had to trim down the code and offer Mac customers a special upgrade. In the long run, merging the Macintosh and Windows versions of Word, as with Excel, is the right thing to do from Microsoft's perspective. It means that Microsoft only has to build and support one version of the product. The incident with Word 6.0, though, reflects Microsoft's lack of concern for Macintosh users and preference for Windows users. If not corrected, this attitude will clearly hurt Microsoft in Macintosh applications, especially word processors. This market is significantly smaller than Windows, although Mac users have traditionally led the broader market, as well as bought a lot of software. The new versions of Excel and Word, as well as other new Microsoft applications, such as PowerPoint, contain several innovative features that have proved attractive to customers and help the products gain market share over specific competitors. In particular, Microsoft has been able to overcome technical and psychological factors that have often kept software customers from switching to other products. For example, Excel contains Help for Lotus 1-2-3 users, and Word has Help for WordPerfect users. These features provide instructions in response to keystrokes that would have activated functions in Lotus 1-2-3 or WordPerfect. Excel and Word also have the ability to read and convert files from a huge number of competing products. In addition, both products contain built-in tools that simplify and automate common tasks, and to some extent, anticipate what the user is trying to do. Word's autocorrect will automatically correct spelling errors or typographical mistakes, capitalize first letters of a sentence, capitalize I when it stands alone, or insert curved smart quotes in the right places. It also, annoyingly, likes to change PCs, uppercase, into PCs, lowercase. Users can also set up autocorrect to type out full words or phrases in place of an abbreviation, like New York Times for NYT. The auto-format feature formats documents in certain styles, while wizards or step-by-step help screens assist users with detailed instructions for complicated tasks. And now Office is making individual desktop applications obsolete. This product works in combination with the Windows operating system and interface, and it employs technologies such as OLE, Dynamic Link Libraries, DLLs, and other design approaches. The result is that Office and similar suites introduced by Novell WordPerfect and Lotus allow their component applications to share features and data in ways that were inconceivable on PCs just a few years ago. MS-DOS machines and applications now seem especially out of date. The application suites also provide an inexpensive way for customers upgrading to Windows to replace these old applications. Windows. We have noted that early versions of Windows sold poorly and were clumsy to use, especially given the limitations of PC hardware at that time. To look right and run fast enough to be acceptable, Windows requires a color monitor, as well as a more powerful processor and more memory than were commonly available before the late 1980s. In addition, few graphical application programs existed in the mid-1980s. Writing applications for Windows is more complex than writing for the DOS standard, and Microsoft took several years to introduce programming tools such as Visual Basic. Applications developers in other companies also hesitated to learn and write for Windows because they were uncertain when and if this would become the market standard. As with Excel and Word, Microsoft kept working on the product. It introduced a second version of Windows in October 1987, specifically designed for the new Intel 80386 microprocessor and developed with the cooperation of Compaq, whose market share for PCs surged due to its aggressive introduction of 386-based computers. The new Windows still seemed slow and awkward to many reviewers and users, but it was clearly a more refined program. Most importantly, Windows created a new market for easy-to-use graphical applications, which were now becoming available. Microsoft led the way itself by writing Excel 2.0 specifically to work with the new Windows program. Excel helped Windows sales and propelled Microsoft into a closer competition with Lotus for the lead in spreadsheets. Windows 3.0, introduced in May 1990, sold nearly 400,000 copies in 5 weeks, and was already a successful product when Microsoft replaced it with the more refined and debugged Windows 3.1 in April 1992. Within a year, 9 out of every 10 personal computers being sold came bundled with this version, and Microsoft has continued to ship more than 2 million copies per month. In early user surveys, Windows 3.1 did not score well in customer support, although Microsoft introduced more phone lines, support personnel, training, support tools, and other measures to address this problem. See Chapter 6 for a discussion of Microsoft's product support services. Windows 3.1 ranks considerably higher than OS 2 in technical satisfaction among users and in ease of use, and it usually runs applications much faster, although it has scored lower than OS 2 in some other categories. Many industry reviewers have long wished for technical improvements, such as better memory management and protection, true multitasking, and an improved program and file manager. At least for new 32-bit applications, however, Microsoft has fixed these problems with Windows NT and Windows 95, and both of these make Windows 3.1 more or less obsolete. Windows NT. The first version of NT brought many complaints from users. NT required a large amount of disk space and computer memory to install and use the program. It also ran many applications slowly, was difficult to install, and had problems with device drivers and compatibility with some applications. For many customers, OS 2, NetWare, Next Step, a version of Unix built around Mach, and other versions of Unix were preferable systems. They had been through multiple versions and ironed out most bugs. NT 3.0, in contrast, was a totally new product in a category, high-end corporate operating systems, where Microsoft had not competed before with any serious commitment. A slimmer version of NT, introduced in fall 1994, numbered 3.5, fixed many of the initial problems and requires fewer hardware capabilities while adding more features. In particular, 3.5 incorporates design changes that make it more reliable when running Windows applications, and it has improved workstation graphics and networking capabilities. In addition, it makes fuller use of OLE, allowing separate applications or objects to interact with each other through a standard interface. Also widely discussed in industry publications and within Microsoft is the next major version change, referred to internally by the codename Cairo and outside the company as Windows NT 4.0. Cairo is not a tightly managed project. It is more like an open-ended research effort. Nonetheless, the project is developing important technologies. In particular, Cairo utilizes a network version of OLE and includes other new features that will give NT much broader capabilities for connecting multiple computers on a network. For example, Cairo will allow users to share applications programs, as well as place and track data and other types of objects across a series of linked computers. This is in addition to supporting applications and objects of data or information on one person's computer. Cairo also contains a new file management technology that does not simply store files by names. It keeps an index of the contents of files and enables users to search for or arrange these by different criteria. Users can ask the operating system to arrange all files relating to a particular topic or that originated on a particular date. This is useful for sophisticated customers who create thousands of separate files and for group work, where people need to share large amounts of information and access it easily. Interface components are also OLE objects, which means that users can add or subtract them, in other words, customize the computer screens, as they desire. Industry observers expect Cairo to appear as a commercial product in 1996 or 1997, although Microsoft has not formally announced the product or a ship date. Windows 95. Once codenamed Chicago, Windows 95 brings Microsoft's mass-market operating system closer to the 10-year-old Macintosh in performance and ease of use. This new system runs with the same relatively modest hardware requirements as Windows 3.1. 4 to 8 megabytes of random access memory, RAM, and a fast 386 processor, compared to the 12 to 16 megabytes of RAM and a fast 486 processor required as a minimum by NT or IBM's OS 2, and preferred for Windows 95 as well. Windows 95 is an incremental improvement technically, in that it incorporates and builds on advanced architectural features that already existed in Windows 3.1 and 3.0. But it also adds new design concepts and features, some of which have come from Windows NT and other Microsoft projects. For example, as with NT and the enhanced mode of Windows 3.1, Microsoft has built Windows 95 around a 32-bit application programming interface called Win32. Win32 is central to Microsoft's system software strategy. As long as applications developers adhere to this standard, any of their applications will run on any of the Windows family that supports the interface. More like NT than 3.1, however, Windows 95 has a layered architecture surrounding a microkernel. The kernel does memory management and multi-threaded task switching, with separate subsystems to handle tasks like display management and file input and output. See Chapter 4 for a more detailed discussion of the Windows 95 architecture. Perhaps most important in terms of performance, Windows 95 bypasses MS-DOS in the same way NT does, at least for new 32-bit applications. This is useful because, when running MS-DOS directly, the operating system cedes control to the individual DOS applications and can only run one application at a time. Windows 3.1 gets around this limitation by cooperative multitasking. The operating system alternates tasks or applications, making it appear to the user that the computer is running multiple tasks or applications simultaneously. The time sharing becomes tediously slow, however, if one of those tasks consumes a lot of processing time, because the alternating occurs evenly among the running applications or tasks. Windows 95, like the NT family, uses preemptive multitasking for new 32-bit Windows application programs. This allows the operating system to determine which tasks or applications are consuming the most power, and it can stop one application to run another or a particular task. As in NT, MS-DOS and 32-bit applications also get their own protected space in Windows 95. If the computer is running multiple applications and one encounters problems and terminates, the others usually remain unaffected. This is a major improvement over MS-DOS and Windows 3.1, which contain only one processing track and are more vulnerable to application crashes. Another enhancement in Windows 95 is the interface. Though Windows 3.1 is much easier to use than any of the MS-DOS versions, industry critics have described the screens as a confusing mishmash of icons, program groups, lists, and menus. Users must also maneuver through files and applications using two separate subprograms called Program Manager and File Manager. The Windows 95 interface is simpler and more integrated, a term Microsoft likes, similar to IBM's OS2 Workplace Shell and Apple's Macintosh. On the Windows 95 desktop, the main computer screen, are folders that hold icons representing an application program or files. A new taskbar at the bottom of the screen tells users which applications are running. It also lets them switch tasks or applications without entering, exiting, and re-entering the separate programs, as required in Windows 3.1. Using technology borrowed from the Cairo project, Windows 95 also lets users customize the screens they see and automate applications by combining features from different programs. Some features in Windows 95 contain all new code and involved substantial architectural work. In particular, the plug-and-play feature enables the operating system to determine what hardware devices users have plugged into the system, then automatically activate the appropriate software drivers for that equipment. The Macintosh has offered a similar capability for years, to the extent that the operating system incorporates device drivers for Apple hardware. In addition, and again like the Macintosh, Windows 95 handles long file names rather than the maximum 8 characters plus a 3-character extension in MS-DOS and Windows 3.1. It also includes fax and electronic mail capabilities, as well as basic networking features found earlier in Microsoft's Windows for Workgroups 3.11 and Microsoft at Work. There is even a button feature that provides a simple connection to the new online Microsoft network without shifting to a separate communications program. Windows 95 has been available in beta test versions sent to as many as 400,000 customer sites since May 1994. The 1995 shipping target fell more than a year and a half behind the original schedule. Microsoft needed extra time to make Windows 95 more compatible with existing applications, as well as to complete and test new features, especially plug-and-play and multitasking. This delay does not reflect well on the ability of the Windows group to estimate how much time they need to build a complex new operating system, even if earlier announced schedules were far too ambitious. Nor has Microsoft been in a hurry to ship. Bill Gates and other managers clearly want to avoid the type of quality problems they used to experience in the 1980s and which Intel recently encountered with the Pentium. Apple has also become reluctant to rush new products out. It has delayed shipment of its long-overdue upgrade to the Macintosh System 7.5 operating system for a full year, to mid-1996. Principle: push volume sales and exclusive contracts to to ensure that company products become and remain industry standards. As long ago as 1981, in a talk at a public conference, Bill Gates discussed the strategic connection between volume and standards. Why do we need standards? It's only through volume that you can offer reasonable software at a low price. Standards increase the basic machine that you can sell into the market. I really shouldn't say this, but in some ways, it leads, in an individual product category, to a natural monopoly, where somebody properly documents, properly trains, properly promotes a particular package, and through momentum, user loyalty, reputation, sales force, and prices, builds a very strong position with that product. More than a dozen years later, this comment serves as an apt description of what Microsoft has done since 1975. It prices, markets, licenses, and supports products in a way that aggressively promotes volume sales. It offers huge discounts on the assumption that it is far better to collect a small sum for each copy of a product if lower prices lead to exponential growth in the market. Over time, these and other tactics have given Microsoft overwhelming leads in such key markets as programming languages, BASIC and Visual Basic, character-based operating systems, MS-DOS, graphical operating systems for the PC, Windows, and desktop application suites, Office. Selling millions of copies of Windows and Office has also helped make OLE into a de facto standard for applications developers. Volume sales have been essential to keep the cycle going and the company growing. Large-scale revenues and profits, first from BASIC and MS-DOS, and then from Windows and Office, have enabled Microsoft to finance the continued refinement and marketing of its products, as well as its huge recent investments in R&D and new ventures. No dedicated PC software company can now match Microsoft's financial resources. The company spent $830 million on R&D in fiscal 1995 alone and has between $4 billion and $5 billion in cash. Gates offered this comment on Microsoft's strategic advantage. It's all about scale economics and market share. When you're shipping a million units of Windows software a month, you can afford to spend $300 million a year improving it and still sell it at a low price. Executive Vice President Steve Ballmer concurred, "Software businesses are all fixed-cost businesses, and so volume is absolutely everything, because you've got to amortize that fixed cost very broadly." BASIC and MS-DOS. Microsoft first promoted volume sales by selling inexpensive licenses to hardware companies in 1975. These provided the right to bundle BASIC with the computers they sold. In the initial pricing scheme for Altair BASIC, for example, MITS Computer paid Microsoft a small royalty for every copy that MITS delivered, with a ceiling of $180,000. MITS also received the rights to relicense BASIC to other companies, in which case MITS and Microsoft shared the royalties. Initially, MITS charged $75 extra to ship BASIC to people who purchased the Altair PC and $500 to people who just wanted the language. The Altair computer itself, without BASIC or an operating system, sold for about $400 unassembled. The MITS prices were extremely cheap, given that mainframe and minicomputer languages usually rented at fees of $400 or more per month. In some other OEM cases with high potential volumes, Gates agreed to inexpensive flat fee deals, such as with Apple for the Apple II and Radio Shack for the TRS-80. Then he did not have to worry about piracy and collecting royalties. Microsoft received $200,000 from IBM to adapt QDOS to the IBM PC and $500,000 instead of royalties for DOS, BASIC, and several language compilers. In contrast to the MITS agreement to relicense BASIC, this new contract prohibited IBM from licensing DOS, but placed no restraints on Microsoft. Microsoft then licensed MS-DOS cheaply to other hardware vendors, thereby establishing it as the PC industry not merely IBM, standard. It first charged other OEM customers $95,000, but since then has sold MS-DOS at half this price to get as many companies as possible behind the standard. When it charges a royalty, Microsoft asks for a low fee, usually bundling MS-DOS and BASIC. This is generally between $1 and $15 per copy, depending on the number of copies. Retail prices are considerably higher and offer room for significant profit margins for hardware manufacturers and retail stores. MS-DOS 6.22 upgrades have recently sold for about $50 in national software chains. As Gates commented, "Our restricting IBM's ability to compete with us in licensing MS-DOS to other computer makers was the key point of the negotiation. We wanted to make sure only we could license it. We did the deal with them at a fairly low price, hoping that would help popularize it. Then we could make our move because we insisted that all other business stay with us. We knew that good IBM products are usually cloned, so it didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that eventually we could license DOS to others. We knew that if we were ever going to make a lot of money on DOS, it was going to come from the compatible guys, not from IBM. They paid us a fixed fee for DOS. We didn't get a royalty, even though we did make some money on the deal. Other people paid a royalty. So it was always advantageous to us. The market grew, and other hardware guys were able to sell units. Subsequently, there were clone competitors to DOS, and there were people coming out with completely new operating systems, but we had already captured the volume, so we could price it low and keep selling." A variety of non-pricing tactics further decreased the likelihood that competing products would challenge MS-DOS or Windows later on. For example, Digital Research's CPM-86, developed in the early 1980s, might have become the dominant PC operating system. Reportedly, it had better memory management features and other advantages over MS-DOS. Microsoft, however, was the leading languages producer, and it did not rush to deliver versions of its languages compatible with CPM-86. When it did ship compatible languages, Microsoft priced them 50% over DOS-compatible versions, and they sold in low volumes. Microsoft also sold only an inferior version of BASIC, stripped of graphics. As a result, applications developers found it difficult to write for anything but MS-DOS, and CPM-86 failed as a competing product. Microsoft introduced perhaps its most effective and controversial marketing innovation, per-processor licensing, in a way that warded off challenges from CPM-86's successor, DR-DOS, as well as from IBM's OS2 and in-house DOS version, IBM PC-DOS. In 1988, Microsoft began offering hardware companies a specially low royalty fee for MS-DOS if they paid something for each computer they shipped, regardless of whether the hardware company bundled each machine with MS-DOS. Dave Moore, Microsoft's director of development, claimed that one reason Microsoft did this was to simplify its own accounting and forecasting. Microsoft provides hardware companies only with a master copy of the software. The latter can easily copy the master and keep no records and pay no royalties. But Microsoft can track how many computers, processors, they ship, and it can forecast sales simply by totaling up manufacturer estimates of how many Intel and compatible microprocessors companies plan to ship. Whatever the intent behind this practice, the Microsoft products quickly became so popular that hardware companies were reluctant to bundle any other software, and they usually wanted the volume discount. After DR-DOS version 5.0 appeared in 1990 and 6.0 in 1991, Microsoft seems to have become particularly aggressive in pushing per-processor contracts. DR-DOS, marketed actively by Novell, which purchased Digital Research in 1991, actually passed MS-DOS during early 1992 in retail sales. Even though retail is a very small percentage of MS-DOS sales, most of which come through OEM hardware vendors, Microsoft responded quickly to the challenge. First, directly after DR-DOS 5.0 came out in April 1990, Microsoft announced that it would upgrade MS-DOS to version 5.0. It took until June 1991 to introduce a product, but the early announcement may have discouraged hardware vendors and other customers from buying DR-DOS. Industry critics often refer to products announced far in advance in order to preempt competitors as vaporware. Although it is common industry practice to let customers know in advance what products are forthcoming. Second, Microsoft appears to have stepped up pressure on hardware vendors to accept the per-processor contracts. Third, Microsoft in 1992 let it be known publicly that DR-DOS might not be fully compatible with Windows, by then on 90% of all new PCs, because Microsoft had not tested it. Microsoft did not use Novell as a beta test site for Windows 3.1. Microsoft even inserted a message warning users who tried to run Windows on top of non-Microsoft versions of DOS that they might encounter compatibility problems, although instances of this proved rare. Windows and Windows 95. Microsoft has used equally low prices and aggressive marketing and licensing tactics to promote Windows. When it first appeared in 1985, Microsoft priced version 1.0 at $90 wholesale per copy, but it charged its largest customers as little as $8 per processor, or $24 a copy. Microsoft claimed to have sold 500,000 or more copies of Windows 1.0 by spring 1987, but it did this by bundling Windows with MS-DOS. Probably no more than 20% of users installed these copies on their machines. Recent versions of Windows 3.1 have sold for about $35 wholesale and $95 retail, and Microsoft is pricing the Windows 95 upgrade comparably. Hardware vendors can reduce the OEM price by as much as $30 if they agree to install Windows 95 on 50% of their PC shipments or adopt the Windows 95 logo and sign a contract by a particular date. Long-term contracts with hardware vendors, even apart from per-processor licensing conditions, make it particularly difficult for competitors to introduce competing products. For example, Microsoft's contracts with leading PC producers, in effect, isolated IBM when it tried to introduce such alternatives to Windows as Presentation Manager and then OS 2. Microsoft has also secured early commitments from hardware producers to license Windows 95. An industry journalist commented on the likelihood of this new product, referred to here as Windows 4.0, failing in the marketplace. "You might as well put your money on Wile E. Coyote to finally catch the Roadrunner. Microsoft's secret weapon is its stack of contracts with just about every PC maker in the world. Thanks to those deals, you can be sure that Windows 4.0 will be preloaded on more than 70% of all PCs sold in 1995. And look for Microsoft to do everything but sell the new Windows door-to-door in an effort to get you to upgrade." Though late to market, most industry analysts expect Windows 95 to sell at least 30 million copies in its first year. Again, as with MS-DOS and early Windows versions, Microsoft is not leaving the success of a major new product to chance. It has announced that it will spend as much as $100 million on the Windows 95 marketing campaign. This is in addition to another $100 million campaign to advertise the Microsoft name and product lines such as Microsoft Home to the general consumer. Furthermore, as discussed below, Microsoft has instituted licensing conditions that greatly discourage applications developers from producing any more products for Windows 3.1. These measures will ensure that Windows 95 and its successors eventually replace Windows 3.1 as the desktop operating system standard. Applications marketing and bundling. The popularity of MS-DOS and Windows has given Microsoft at least an indirect advantage in marketing applications. The company has close relationships with many hardware vendors and retail software stores, and millions of customers see the Microsoft name every time they start up their computers. These marketing relationships appear to have helped the company sell formerly unpopular or new applications, such as Works, PowerPoint, Mail, and Access, in addition to Microsoft's multimedia titles. In particular, Microsoft made the initially unpopular Works into a best-selling product by selling it to OEM vendors who have bundled it with their PCs, as they have done with Basic, MS-DOS, and Windows. Millions of users have also switched to Word and Excel and tried the far less popular PowerPoint and Access programs because Microsoft has bundled as well as technically integrated these into Office. Retail customers can buy the standard version of Office for approximately $250, a huge discount compared to a list price of $300 or more for each of its three main programs. Tens of millions of MS-DOS users upgrading to Windows make a simple and inexpensive purchasing decision by buying the latest version of Office, a product from a manufacturer they all know. Bundling these applications into Office has also enabled Microsoft to ship more copies of its presentation software, PowerPoint, and expand market acceptance and usage of this previously low-volume product category. Bundling applications together, lowering prices, advertising the Microsoft name, or selling aggressively to retail stores, however, are not going in themselves to sell applications. Products have to be close to or as good as the market leaders, and they have to be relatively early to market. The low sales of Microsoft Money compared to Quicken attest to this reality. Overseas markets. Much of what it has achieved in the United States, the world's first and largest PC market, Microsoft has replicated overseas. Charles Simony offered the economic logic. We realized from day zero, or at least day zero of applications, that international is key. It makes the product 3 to 5% more complex, and it doubles your market. It at least doubles. Following this rationale, Microsoft designed MS-DOS 2.0, released in 1983, for easy internationalization. Since then, it has designed most new versions of its major products for international sales and has established 36 subsidiaries around the world. Not surprisingly, more than 40% of Microsoft's revenues now come from overseas, mainly Japan and Europe. The strategy to compete in these markets has been the same as in the United States: form alliances and use a variety of pricing and non-pricing tactics to obtain long-term agreements, whereby companies bundle Microsoft software with the local hardware. In Japan, Microsoft established an early position in the PC operating systems market by building relationships with NEC and other Japanese PC manufacturers.